This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
On December 22, 1989, in the south side of Chicago, a neighborhood insurance broker visited an auto repair shop owner to collect his premium, but the visit ended with both men fatally shot. Investigators allegedly received an anonymous tip that a man known as Peter Gunn and his brother may have been involved, which led investigators to a young man with that nickname, James Gibson, and his brother Harold. But Harold had an insurmountable alibi, where James did not. A lengthy interrogation produced a statement naming two other men, Eric Johnson and Fernando Webb, who were also brought in for questioning, producing two new statements indicating that James Gibson had hired Eric Johnson as a lookout for a robbery gone wrong. The courts must have thought that allegations of police brutality and coerced confessions were just vain attempts to get away with a double murder. But this is wrongful conviction. Welcome back to Wrongful Conviction, where today we're going once again to Cook County for yet another tragic encounter with John Burge and his Midnight Crew and their unique brand of evil. And although we obviously hate what our guest went through to be here, we're just absolutely honored to have him here with us. James Gibson, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And of course, with him is a civil rights attorney from Action Injury Law Group out of Chicago, Andrew M. Stroth. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, we've covered Midnight Crew cases before. Marcus Wiggins, Sean Tyler, Reggie Henderson. But they don't even begin to scratch the surface of the depravity and pure evil that was taking place under the watch of Detective Commander John Burge, who had come off the battlefields of Korea and Vietnam and brought with him torture tactics to the streets of Chicago. And he was brutalizing suspects and witnesses alike from the early 70s through his termination in 1993. But the torture didn't stop there. It continued on through his cohorts, Detectives Foley, Halloran, Palladino, Boudreaux, O'Brien, Maslanka, and many, many others, as well as their enablers in the judiciary and the state's attorney's office. And when a crime occurred, they'd kidnap black children and young men off the streets, seemingly at random, without any rhyme or reason. And then they'd take them to this warehouse, torture chamber, where they'd beat, electrocute, starve them, suffocate them, or worse, until false statements again would send another innocent person to prison. And of course, the real perpetrator would get away with the crime. But James, before you had the misfortune of meeting these dirtbags, you grew up in Chicago, right? So what was your childhood like?
I grew up in a house of silence. My mother was deaf, and she did the best that she could with the decks that was dealt to her as a handicapped African-American woman, single parent.
And you were one of five siblings, right?
Two of my siblings, they passed away before I was born. So yes, it would be like five siblings, yes. my mother's immediate kids, yes.
Wow, that must have been really tough on the family, losing two children. I mean, one is hard, like impossible to get over. Two is too much. Now, what were you up to in the lead up to the time that this crime occurred?
I graduated high school with honors and later went on to Wiley College in Marshall, Texas. I was young, dating a young lady. We had a baby on the way. She was in the military and it was around the holiday season in 1989. And I was on a break trying to get my finances together, trying to get my housing together and figure out my next move in life.
Oh, so your girlfriend was in the military, as was your sister. So now you're back in Chicago with family, getting things ready for your new baby and the holidays. Now, I want to turn to Andrew to get the facts of what happened here. These two older gentlemen, as I understand it, Lloyd Benjamin and Hunter Wash, just around the block from James's childhood home at an auto body shop that I understand was Mr. Wash's place of business.
You're right. Mr. Wash operated an automobile repair shop and garage. His nickname around the neighborhood was Smiley. And then Lloyd Benjamin, who everybody knew in the neighborhood, was called the insurance man because he sold insurance to the folks in the community and collected the premiums. And on December 22nd, 1989, he was in the area collecting premiums. And Lloyd Benjamin and Hunter Wash were murdered.
Right, fatally shot. And it's assumed that the assailant or assailants were after those premiums. However, nothing was reported to have been taken from either victim. And then there's this extra added racial dynamic where Mr. Benjamin was a white guy murdered in a predominantly black area. Now, were there any witnesses, leads, anything at all?
There's no witnesses that we believe with any credibility that came to the police and said they saw the actual murder. No affirmative DNA or other objective evidence.
So not a lot to go on. But again, this was the Midnight Crew, where the pattern and practice was to write their own narratives and just coerce, it's too nice of a word, torture people into saying whatever lies they wrote down in order to close a case. So somehow or another, James's nickname, Peter Gunn, got thrown into the mix.
But they said on the record that there was an anonymous call from a female who did not identify herself. And then they said it was somebody on the street that had spread rumors that a guy named Peter Gunn and his brother had did a crime. And so detectives had entered to my mother's home in Southside Chicago and raided the house and arrested my brother, my eldest brother, Harold Gibson, and several other guys in the neighborhood.
So according to the Midnight Crew, a nameless, faceless source and quote unquote word on the street is what led them to you and your brother, Harold, in addition to two other guys, Eric Johnson and Fernando Webb. So when and how did you end up in this nightmare?
I got contacted, and so I headed back to my mother's home. Once I entered into her home, I noticed that my great-grandmother at the time was on the floor and the house was in disarray. Keep in mind that my mother cannot hear. So my mother was trying to explain or talk the best she could in language that she had. She points over towards a card. The card had on it phone numbers and identified as detectives O'Myers and Collins. When I called the number on the card, at first I thought it was John Burgess, but it was Sergeant Byrne. I get those names kind of confused sometimes because I'd never encountered these people until this moment. And they transferred me or whatever they did, however they did it back then. And they were talking back and forth. And I get a knock at the door, my mother's house. When I opened the door was flooded with guns and officers. You know what I'm saying? And so they came in and they asked me a few questions. I identified myself. They asked me about my nickname, Peter Gunn. I said, yes, my name is Peter Gunn. You know my nickname is Peter Gunn. They said, come with us. And they took me to this place on California, somewhere in Chicago. And they put me in a room. I later learned that it was called Area 3, a homicide.
James and his brother were taken into custody and beaten. He was kicked. He was slapped by these officers, John Burge and the Midnight Crew. He was held overnight. He was handcuffed to a chair, not able to sleep, not given any food or drink, nor was he even allowed to use the washroom. James was then put into three different lineups by officers O'Mara, Collins, Maslenka, Palladino, and McCann, and was not identified in any of these lineups.
Right. And it's not hard to imagine that that happened even with the most suggestive tactics that the Midnight Crew could muster.
It was 98 hours they had me in these rooms, different rooms in custody, beating on me and slapping on me and broke my ribs, burnt me and played all in my balls and slapped me around and all that. But I had been knocked out a few times. I didn't realize that it had been 4 days, 98 hours that I had been beat on and tortured and all this other stuff.
Meanwhile, if we can go to like a split screen here, you're getting moved from room to room, beaten, and your sister and her husband were just arriving in town from the military at Midway Airport.
My sister, she was doing a transfer from Washington, D.C. I'm not quite sure if she was going to Korea or Germany, but it was 10 hours or 12-hour layover before she leave the country. And so by my mother living a few blocks from the airport, she came in and found out that both of her brothers was in custody.
But your brother Harold had such an airtight, convincing, and provable alibi that they had no choice but to eventually drop the charges against him. However, it seems they found your alibi to be penetrable enough to continue on with this horrible frame job. And meanwhile, unbeknownst to you, your sister and her husband were on their way to Area 3 in full uniform. So then what happened?
They had taken me into a room. It was two state's attorneys. One of them was a female, the other male, and two detectives. Foley, F-O-L-E-Y, and another guy, not quite sure.
And our audience will remember Detective Foley from the awful case of Sean Tyler and Reggie Henderson. So what happened in this room?
To stop the beatings and the torture after being burned and all that stuff, I agreed to make a statement. And so they was preparing a statement. They said, we want you to put your initials, JG, on each sentence that we complete. And then we're going to turn it into the state's attorney to stop this ass whooping. So at the 98th hour, they going over prepping me with the statement to sign. The door bust open and it was Sergeant Byrne. He busted into the room and he whispered something to the state's attorney's ears that this nigga got the military downstairs. And they asked him a lot of questions. It was my sister and her husband with their uniforms on, and I later found out that they was talking to John Burns at the time. And so Manilowski and Panadino, I think that's their name, if I pronounced them right, that came in. She told him, get his ass out of here and take him down the other way and get him out of here. And boom, they from me finna sign the double murder confessions to stop the beating, to snatching my ass up, to running me down the back steps and throwing me in the back seat of a car.
Which doesn't really sound like standard operating procedure for a suspect in a double murder, right? Add as much sarcasm to that as you possibly can, because I hope it was dripping with it. And then I understand they just took you home?
Yeah. They was like, we're going to drop you off. So now I told them, man, well, take me in the alley, man. Drop me off in the back. I don't want no motherfuckers seeing me with y'all, man. Y'all been in there beating on me and shit, and now you're going to drop me off in front of my house like y'all my friend and shit. They might think I'm telling something. So they dropped me off in the back of the house. And as I was coming in the side door of my mother's house, my sister's coming in the front door. And all of the kids and them, they ran to try to embrace me. But I had injuries I didn't know I had on my body. So when they went to grab me, I broke down. And my sister's like, what's going on? What's wrong with you? And so that's when me and my sister had a conversation about, man, this is what they did to me. And so she, before I know it, she grabbed the phone and started calling some military people and stuff. And they gave her a phone number to call. She ended up calling down to OPS.
And OPS stands for Office of Professional Standards, which was founded in the 1970s to carry out independent investigations of mounting allegations of police brutality.
I didn't know that at that time you can call the police on the police. My sister was like, man, they did this. It's against the law. I'm locking their ass up. OPS ended up getting on the phone call. His name was Ortiz or something like that. I said, man, they beat my ass. He said, man, can you identify me? I tell him on the name on the card and what happened. He said, man, hold on. I'm going to send a car to get you tomorrow.
But as I understand it, there was another car coming for you that night. It turns out that the Midnight Crew had also been working on Fernando Webb and Eric Johnson, who had probably been made aware of your alleged statement. What was in that statement?
The contents of the false statement after the 98 hours of torturing me and beating me and burning me was that I was outside of the garage and seen Eric Johnson hand the gun to Bodine, which is Philando Webb, and commit the crime.
So the statement placed you as a witness, even though you hadn't seen anything. And it looked like Webb was actually their target, at least at the time that you gave your statement.
It's our perspective, based on the evidence that we reviewed, that Fernando Webb, who was a heroin addict, had a history of weapon offenses, a history of armed robberies, attempted murder, and other violent crimes, was the person that committed this double murder.
And as we so often see, somebody who's in a position like Webb was may be tempted to trade false information for leniency or even freedom. So what did his statement say?
That he was shooting Heron and he was walking his dog to go get him another fix of Heron, and that he walked up to a guy with a gun in his hand and he asked this guy with the gun in his hand, "Man, what's up?" And then he got three blocks away and heard gunshots. Then they turned around and identified the guy that he asked what's up with the gun in his hand as Peter Gunn.
And it's unclear when this statement was made. Perhaps Webb was even the original source of your nickname. Either way, his false statement made James the shooter and completely removed Webb from culpability. No mention of Eric Johnson, by the way. So what was in his statement?
Johnson made a statement to police that James Gibson told him about his plans to rob Lloyd Benjamin and that James paid him $50 to be on the lookout. Johnson also said he saw James shoot and kill Benjamin. This statement was false also because Johnson was tortured, threatened, and beaten by Officer McCann, Caesar, Bresco, Rusnik, Maslanka, Palladino, and Byrne.
Right. So obviously unreliable, but this false statement made James the shooter once again, while keeping Johnson closely involved enough to identify him.
Yeah. See, so this is the catch, though. This is the catch. I want you to get this. He said, "I paid him to watch me to do a stick up because I needed money to fix one of my disabled vehicles."
Right. If you needed to rob for that money, how could you have paid him anything? It makes no sense. Plus, nothing had been reported as taken from the victims. But now they had two statements saying that you were the shooter and Eric Johnson had allegedly named himself as your accomplice. And eventually Johnson's sisters, Carla Smith and Janice Johnson, were dragged into this as well. So the Midnight Crew came back to get you before OPS could.
They came back and rearrested me a couple hours later once the complaints was filed. When they came back and got me the second time, they took me up to another place on the third floor and they put me in a cage set in the middle of all of their desks. And then I seen them bringing in Carla Smith and Janice Johnson and all them other stuff.
The officers used intimidation and lies in order to get these two sisters to corroborate the story that Gibson killed Mr. Benjamin and Mr. Wash. And what the officers told them, based on what we know, is that they would be light on their brother if they went along with the story.
Janice Johnson said, "I broke into their house and started immediately sharing a robbery plan with a whole family."
So no witnesses from our perspective had any credibility.
And then I end up at the county jail in front of Judge Bastone, the chief judge. They told me, "You get out in front of the judge, man, keep your motherfucking hands behind your back." So when I went out in front of the judge, I put my hands behind my back and my left rib cage popped out of my chest. When it popped out of my chest, I fell down to the ground. Chief Judge Bastone, he looked over the bench and he said, "What's going on?" And out of anger, I said, "The motherfuckers, they kicked me in my chest. There's something wrong with my chest. I can't breathe." "Like what?" And then the chief judge turned over to the bailiff, the police. He said, "Where y'all just bringing from?" And then the turnkey said, "Boss, Area 3 brought him." He said, "What? Area 3? He told the turnkey, "Get the police, close the door, lock all the doors." And told the public defender, "Bring them back in the back to my chambers." So when I got back to the back of the chambers, there was a lot of motions and arguing and shit going back with the chief judge and the public defender and the state's attorney telling, "Man, get your supervisor in here and you get your order and you get a photographer in and you get them people to bring them in here," and having me shipped to Cermak Hospital, et cetera.
Wow. So the abuse was actually going to be documented. It seems like this Judge Bastone might have actually been a decent person.
If you say a decent person,
Decency seems really hard to come by in a story like yours.
Judge Bastone saved my life.
Man, I'm...
If it hadn't been for him recording and taking those photographs of those injuries because they tried to destroy him in the discovery, but he kept a copy. If it weren't for Judge Bastone having the courage to order and sign all the photographs with his badge number and his name.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The photos wasn't revealed from 1989 to 2015. Every time I went in front of the judge, I was asking my defense attorney about the police reports, the photographs, the statements, the evidence, and he was telling me there was no evidence, there was no statement, there was no none of that.
And unfortunately, your trial was not going to be held in front of Judge Bastone, but instead a judge named Nevels. So one can surmise that the photographic proof of this brutality was now being hidden. But your public defender, Paul Stroker, he didn't raise the issue?
No. My public defender was in on the fix as well as the judge Nevels and the state's attorney and all the rest of them. But we got into a dialogue about the pictures and the photos with the judge and them trying to explain, well, I'm not the judge that was down there, et cetera, et cetera. And what pictures you talking about? And they never came into the trial.
I mean, your lawyer, you'd think he'd reach out to Judge Bastone, but that's just not what happened. And you, James, most of our guests wait until after they're convicted to learn the law, but you started in pre-trial.
All the motions that was filed before trial and after trial and in trial, they was all motions that I filed, pro se. Every time I went in front of the judge, I would backdoor my lawyer because we would have conversations before we go in front of the judge about certain issues, and he would tell me some bullshit. And then we get out in front of the judge, I would put him on the front street, and then the judge would try to tell me some stuff, and then the state's attorney would try to tell me something, but I had motions already prepared to file them myself. But because I wasn't skilled in the expertise of criminal science and law at that time, I was trying to perfect and bring in my issues as best I could.
But obviously, you weren't going to be skilled enough yet for the monster that you were trying to battle with, right? It was David versus Goliath, for what you were up against.
So I ended up having a conversation with attorney Timothy Nass, which was a paid attorney for Eric Johnson, to try to preserve some of those issues. And we ended up having a motion hearing to squash the rest, suppress the evidence and the statements separately, but together.
Meaning that both you and Eric Johnson had both been severely beaten, that the statements were therefore clearly unreliable and should have been thrown out immediately. All while your lawyer was, I don't know, taking a nap?
Mm-hmm. And so what they did was they brought in all these declarated officers with their badges and their uniforms on, and they parading them in one by one to get on the stand and say, these guys are lying and we never did A, Y, and Z. And so they denied Eric Johnson's motion as being tortured, and they denied my motion, et cetera. And then they split up the trial and ruled that it was antagonized defense because Eric Johnson never testified against me at trial.
All made possible by the ineffective assistance of your own lawyer, whose strategy, from what I understand, was that since your statement, although false, wasn't inculpatory to you, but only to Eric Johnson, he wasn't trying to contest it. But you were morally bound to not falsely accuse Eric Johnson, as well as expose what these officers were doing. So much good it did at the time. Now, you took a bench trial, right? So that was your attorney's idea, huh?
Yes. It was something that my attorney had convinced me of. He said, man, I did this shit, man. He said, a white man got killed, man. You take a jury trial, man, they're going to put your ass on death row, man. He said, man, take a bench trial, man. You can beat this, man. He tried to convince me that Judge Neville was a law judge and that there was no physical or scientific evidence to connect me to the case. There was no DNA fibers and no murder weapon, et cetera, and no statement and none of that stuff. And so it was likelihood that once I tell the judge I'm not going to take a jury trial, he's going to throw the case out. But this is the catch. If I'd have took a jury trial, the judge would have threw the case out right there because there would have been none to take to the jury to deliberate.
A motion to suppress would have been filed and the evidence would have never made it into trial.
But I was so confused because my lawyer told me, man, take a bench trial. A white boy got killed and all that shit. Boy, you're going to go to death row. I got scared in that moment and I fumbled the ball and took a bench trial.
And your trial began on October 7th, 1991. And even though Eric Johnson refused to testify, it didn't matter. His statement implicating you was read into the record. In addition, despite Eric Johnson's refusal, the state was still able to get his sisters, Carla Smith and Janice Johnson, to testify that you had told them that you were going to stick up the insurance man to get money to fix your car.
They told him, if y'all don't continue to lie and say what y'all said against Zad Giffen, we locking y'all ass up for obstructing the justice of perjury. So once they started lying, they had to keep lying. But all the time, Carla, I never had been over to her house. Janice Johnson, at the time that she said I was on the back of her house, she had punched in. She was at work.
And then they brought in Fernando Webb, who was at that time serving a sentence for armed robbery in another case, and admitted that the prosecution had promised to free him in exchange for his testimony.
The statements given by Eric Johnson, Fernando Webb, Carla, and Janice were procured by torture, by intimidation, lies, and false promises by the Chicago police.
And let's not forget about James's own alleged statement, which was not inculpatory. I mean, essentially, it's a false witness statement implicating Eric Johnson. So in a last-ditch effort to seal the deal, the state presented an officer named Moser.
The state brought in Officer Moser to testify to a statement that I allegedly made to him. But then I objected, and the judge said, what you objecting for? I say, because my lawyer ain't objecting. Objection, Your Honor. He said, well, what be objecting for? I say, because the state's finna bring out an officer to testify to something they ain't got no record of, but now we're in the middle of trial and you want to bring in a statement from the officer. Before we went to trial, we tried to challenge these issues, but you wouldn't let us challenge it. My lawyer didn't file any motion to challenge it. So the judge said, hold it, wait a minute, we're in the middle of trial. And you're going to file a motion to limit it to exclude the officer testimony? So the judge ruled that since I ain't never heard it, nobody never challenged it, I can't deal with it in a vacuum. So I'm going to have to hear what it say and then I'll determine if I allow it in or not after I hear what it say.
So even though the original statement that they beat out of you and tortured out of you was exculpatory, Chicago PD produced one more false statement, the word of this officer, no record of it, in which you allegedly incriminated yourself. Wow.
Judge Nevels said on record, he said he didn't believe that Philando Webb was telling the truth, that Janice Johnson was telling the truth, that Collin, whatever her name is, was telling the truth, or even Eric Johnson, that he didn't believe no testimony of nobody other than that statement they said I allegedly made. And without that statement, he couldn't find me guilty, but he had to find me guilty because the police said I made that statement. He found the police credible and gave me natural life.
You dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
I've been educating myself in criminal law for 34 years. I know everybody. I've worked on all the cases in Stateville, Pontiac, and Menard. I was the warden's porter. I used to have the control and the run of the whole prison, so I was able to file and maneuver for everybody. And then when I wasn't the warden's porter, I was the groundskeepers where the helicopters come in and all that. And when I wasn't that, I was the officer's kitchen worker, cook for the people, and then I was the accounting. So I had access that other inmates couldn't have. I had been filing motions for blacks, whites, Puerto Ricans, BDs, GDs, Stones, vice lords.
James knows more about the law than 90% of the lawyers that I know and stayed safe. In four max prisons back then, huge gang populations. You weren't safe in those prisons. James was able to navigate those prisons for one reason. Even though he feared for his life every day, he was a legal resource. He worked with the different factions in the prison, and that made him a protected person. He didn't see the Michael Jordan years. He didn't see the Oprah Winfrey years. He didn't see the election of Barack Obama. James Gibson spent his time in the law library. Not only did James handle his own appeals, James has helped hundreds of inmates in Illinois and outside of Illinois with their cases.
I had been filing motions for other guys, and I started to come to understand that this is a pattern in practice. I'm not the only one.
So with your knowledge of the law being such an asset to everyone, you got to see kind of a bird's eye view of the system, at least in Illinois, while still keeping your eye on the prize in your own case. Andrew, can you give us a bit of a rundown on his appellate history?
He did file a timely appeal from the verdict. His conviction was then affirmed by the appellate court, then denied leave to appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court, as well as petition of certiorari to the United States Supreme Court. Later, in court as a jailhouse lawyer, filed several post-conviction petitions and a habeas corpus petition, all of which were denied.
Which is obviously maddening, considering all of the issues we've raised. But in addition to his legal and social maneuvering, James started a media campaign.
I was doing satellite radio from prison. I had wrote 10,000 letters to the nation. And I had got some momentum after Hugh Hefner, the great Hugh Hefner, Playboy magazine. They had did a story about us in Area 2. And I had got a story ran with Stevie J and Benzino at Hip Hop Weekly. And so it started catching momentum. Once I wrote to the United Nations, and the United Nations responded, people started talking about it all over the world. They formed into law the Illinois Torture Relief Commission.
And this was an investigation around credible evidence related to the allegations against John Burge and the Midnight Crew. And they basically knew a lot of individuals, black men, were tortured, beaten, made to confess the crimes they didn't commit.
And when they voted on the General Assembly and the legislators on the floor, they mentioned the James Gibson case as the poster child for why we need to go and investigate all these other cases.
So when you finally got around to review, what did the commission find?
The initial summary was that they found that I had been tortured and collaborated and sustained and substantiate those allegations.
And so James was given the opportunity by the torture commission to have his case reviewed by the Circuit Court of Cook County for what's called judicial review. And basically, James submitted 46 exhibits and over 950 pages in support of his case. So he went through that whole process, which ultimately led to the judge granting his Turk evidentiary hearing.
And then I filed with the Torture Relief Commission saying that, man, for decades, the city of Chicago, the governor, the mayor, the state's attorney, the lawyers, the judges, the hospital, all of them is pattern practice. They've been denying us basic rights to due process, equal protection of law. I don't want no money. I just want my day in court as a citizen of the United States to prove A, Y, and Z once and for all.
So what did you present? I mean, back in 1991, the court had taken this officer Moser's word for it and said on record that all of the other evidence was not credible. Then every appellate court had upheld this conviction. So what finally turned the tide?
Well, what led back to getting back in court was John Burgess had called me in 1990 in the county jail after the complaints was filed. John Burgess thought that he had intercepted and destroyed all of the communications. So he was calling me to rub it in my face to tell me, yeah, nigga, you ain't never getting out of jail. The complaints you filed, nigga, ain't no motherfucker gonna believe that shit. I'm the commander. That shit gone. And you have a nice life. You lucky they ain't give your ass the death penalty. Bye. And he hung the phone up, but he didn't know that one of the motherfuckers' original complaints had got out in the mail. Ortiz gave me that reference number. He mailed to 5734 South Aberdeen to my mother's house. You know what she did? She put the letters in a briefcase because she couldn't identify it, and they found the briefcase with the original complaints 20-some years later.
So Burge thought he had destroyed all other copies and evidence of your torture before calling you in jail to kind of dunk on you and shove it in your face.
Bitch-ass nigga. That's what he did. He said, now you're going to try to take me down? Bitch, I run the hospital. He had got the photographs. He had got discovery. He had got to the judge. He got to the state's attorney. He got to the lawyers. But that one letter.
It made it out. So wait, how did you manage to prove that this phone call took place?
When I was going through my investigation, I told them about the conversation. They told me we had the ability to go back and get any phone call that came from a municipality or a city official or a federal facility for the last 100 years. And I said, what? I said, well, that's a beautiful thing. And check it out. He didn't call from his department. He went into the OPS department to make that call. And that's what he failed to realize, as his smart ass didn't know, that he made the phone call, whether he made it from his office or another office, he made it inside this building, and they're not going to destroy that call. I didn't know all that, so they actually went back and got the original call. And once I told them around the date and month that it happened, they told me that slick shit out their mouth. Yeah, they thought they had me then.
They thought James was lying when he talked about the call from John Burge, and they went back and checked the records and saw that that call was placed and Mr. Gibson was being truthful.
So they're finally starting to come around. There was proof of the complaint to OPS as well as the phone call from Burge. What about Judge Bastone's photographs that never made it to trial?
Thank God for Judge Bastone. He had kept a copy and signed it, and he had his archives and his work and shit, right? On top of him filing the proper paperwork, and they matched the signatures and his badge number on each one of the photographs. And they was like, what the hell is going on? You know, they're on the other side. They're like, this kid is really telling the truth. And that's when I started finding out about Cermak Hospital, right? For 25 years, Cermak Hospital, it was writing me back talking about somebody misplaced your file. Somebody changed your file. Somebody took this out your file. They was writing me back with their smart self, telling me in full for 20 years. I kept all that shit. And I finally presented all my evidence to the court. The court say, man, oh my God. They said, oh, we ain't got to hit no more.
So Burge's medieval torture tactics had finally been exposed. But what about all of his lackeys? Did they get dragged in front of the Torture Relief Commission?
As you read in the summary report of the TRRC, the officers, when they was asked about it, they threw John Burge under the bus and signed off. They told him, John Burge said, told him to do A, Y, and Z.
So they admitted it. And then you made your way back into the appellate process where you were fighting an appointed special prosecutor in front of Judge Neera Walsh. So what did they do in an actual court of law?
In my first hearing, they pleaded the fifth. They wouldn't testify to anything. Did you arrest James Gibson? I plead the fifth. Did you torture James? I plead the fifth. Are you Chicago police? I plead the fifth. So they wouldn't ask any questions, and the judge found that credible.
So despite the explosive revelations of the Torture Relief Commission, this judge still denied you, saying that there was, quote, sufficient evidence to support that no torture occurred, unquote. It's unfucking real.
And then the appellate court overturned that shit again, sent me back.
Right, that was 2018 when the appellate court said that the officers could not rebut your allegations in any meaningful way.
They had sent me back instructing Neera Walsh to draw an adverse inference and then reconsider all of the evidence as a whole. And she wouldn't open up the courtroom to reconsider it.
So get this. Walsh gave these reasons for her refusal. That you had invented your torture claims to piggyback on Eric Johnson's claims, which, by the way, earned Johnson a new trial back in 2012. And she made that ruling with the knowledge that you had filed your complaint on the night that you were released from custody back in 1989. Just moronic. But she continued by explaining away the pictures of your injuries, that they could have been made while you were in jail, or get this, that they could have been self-inflicted.
And then they instructed the chief judge to remove her, order a new trial, and throw out the statement, whether it convicted me or not.
So finally, in March 2019, the appellate court called Walsh manifestly wrong while vacating your conviction.
Then the Supreme Court affirmed it with no dissension.
So then comes April 26, 2019. You had a hearing about whether or not the state would retry you.
Well, I go in front of the judge. The lawyers come in the back and say, man, you might get $1 million bond, but we don't know. So after we had the hearing, the judge said, Mr. Gibson, I'm so sorry for this tragedy. Special prosecutor, you wasted enough state's time Mr. Gibson, how much money can you pay? I said, well, I've been working inside the prison. He said, $2,000. I bond myself out the county jail. And then 2 days later, I got a call from special prosecutor. I dropped the charges in a couple of days if you don't challenge your certificate of innocence.
And in Illinois, that's what you file for, to get state compensation and pursue civil litigation. So really, they were just trying to minimize the financial damage.
Right. So I told him that I'm going to see you in court tomorrow. When I got in court, he said, we got good news and we got bad news. Which one do you want to hear? And then I said, man, I don't care what y'all got, man. I'm ready to go to court. Let's do this. And they like, we dropping the charges. And I said, that's good news because I got a motion for you. And they said, what motion is that? I got a motion if I'm going to be arguing in front of the judge after that to remove you. Then state's attorney Kim Fox was appointed, and then she didn't challenge my certificate of innocence, and I was granted a certificate of innocence.
Right. So between the time that these proceedings started in 2019, Kim Fox, much needed new blood, was elected to the state's attorney's office in Cook County. So the charges were finally dropped, and you got your certificate of actual innocence in February 2020.
I mean, like, I had been fighting, and that was my moment. In 2015, I knew I was coming up out of there, but I didn't think it would take me that long after I got my first reversal. I'm saying, I thought the issue was cut and dry, but this Judge Neil Wash, she took me through a bunch of extra more years for nothing.
Which is just absolutely unforgivable. Just as unforgivable as the obstinance you're now facing in civil litigation.
Mr. Gibson filed a federal civil rights lawsuit that's been pending against the city of Chicago and the officers who beat, tortured him. I mean, James Gibson, they took him at 23. He didn't come out till he was 53 years old. And they're still fighting him today, the city of Chicago and the law firms representing the city of Chicago. Their entire approach for the past 4 years has been relitigating the criminal case and pointed to James as a murderer. And what does a certificate of innocence mean? He is factually innocent by every single tribunal. The certificate of innocence is a significant review of the evidence, the facts, the law. And so to me, the notion that the city fights plaintiffs whose lives have been ruined when they have a certificate of innocence is unimaginable. James is still waiting for his day in court on the civil case. And after 4 years of costly litigation, the city has spent hundreds of millions of dollars to outside defense law firms litigating on behalf of the city of Chicago and officers, whether it's John Burge, Ronald Watts, Ronaldo Guevara, racist officers who took away the lives and liberty of Black men, Hispanic men who have been tortured, convicted, spent decades in custody. And the city of Chicago, even under the current mayor, Brandon Johnston, are still relitigating the underlying criminal case and wasting taxpayer money and torturing again in the litigation system people like James Gibson.
I mean, it makes exactly zero fucking sense. Whose face are they saving? The individual officers? Those scumbags? The state? The system? The cat's out of the bag. And it's not like they're saving money when they're paying all of these private defense firms way more than a settlement could even cost, right? But yet they continue.
James Gibson is going to be a catalyst for change. James Gibson has the only case that is currently pending that has what's called a non-bifurcated Monell claim. A Monell claim, as you know, is a pattern in practice. So James's case is not just about the injuries to him and the wrongful conviction and the torture and the beatings. James Gibson's case has Monell allegations that prove that the city of Chicago had a pattern and practice of abusing Black men for decades. And so as we move forward towards trial in 2024, James Gibson is not just fighting for himself. He's fighting for justice for every other Black and Hispanic man or woman who sustained abuse by the Chicago police.
And that might very well be the motivation in fighting him so hard. So, Godspeed. Now, James, while you've been home fighting your civil case, you've also been continuing the work you were doing inside.
I've still been continuing my advocacy work and my foundation, Clarence James Gibson Foundation, James Grant Consulting. I've been up to bringing my brothers home from prison. Commutations, post-convictions, alpha pleas, time cuts. I just brought a guy home last week. After 21 years, I've been working on this case, James Freeman. I brought home dozens of guys. That's what I do. The city of Chicago, since 2005, $1.9 billion in settlements and fines. Right now, sitting with 21 cases pending in the federal courts, lawsuits. That's what I do.
And that's not all you do.
Since I've been home, I formed my own publishing company because I got a book deal and a movie deal. I got this music studio in Skokie, Illinois. It's called 3Z Music House. And I brought in a bunch of people to help me build silent rooms, soundproof rooms, and designs. You can go on my website and see it. And so what I do is I bring in all of the young people into my studio, and they find out, they read my story. They say, man, your mother was deaf? And so I tell them, yes. Yeah. So I share a lot of letters. And so they take my letters, and they rewrite them, and then they go into the booth, and it might be a rap song, it might be a country song, it might be an R&B song. My number one song right now has broke the top 40 chart. The song is a letter to my mother, Mama, can you hear me? And it's a promise that I keep to her. Every year I go to a different ocean around the world and I meet with her for 5 minutes. I'm just having a conversation with my mother if I could.
Well, that's beautiful. So how can our audience follow along with everything you're doing?
You can log on by IamJamesGibson.com on Instagram to JamesGibson635, or you can go on James Gibson Facebook page, or you can go into my YouTube channel where I go around the world and I fight injustices and I highlight all my consulting and publishing work. It's called James Gibson on the Land.
All right. Well, we're going to have all that linked. Check it out and get involved. Follow this incredible man's journey. And now I want to turn to closing arguments, my favorite part of the show. So let's start with Andrew. Andrew, just feel free to just spout off on anything you think may have been left unsaid. And then hand the microphone off to James. And James, you take us off into the sunset.
You know, I spent 20 years representing pro athletes. I started Action 10 years ago to serve black and brown people whose rights have been violated by the police. I'm humbled and honored to represent James Gibson because of what he endured. And listen, I can't imagine 30 years in prison, and most people would not persevere. James Gibson has turned his pain, his faith in God, into true purpose in advancing civil rights in America, especially for black and brown individuals. And James Gibson's going to change the game. He's going to change the game for wrongfully convicted people across the country.
On August the 1st, 2023, man, I officially closed my case, man, after 34 years, man. Ain't nothing else left to be said, man, to bring closure. I just want to say that I believe that, man, it's okay to be different, man. You know what I'm saying? I believe that we're living in a time that, man, that was written about long ago, man. Until we other people learn to love that which created love in us, then we'll get out of this mess in which we're in.
Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts. I want to thank our production team, Connor Hall and Kathleen Fink, as well as my fellow executive producers, Jeff Kempler, Kevin Wardis, and Jeff Clyburn. The music in this production was supplied by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us across all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on Instagram at It's Jason Flom. Wrongful Conviction is a production of Lava for Good Podcasts in association with Signal Company No. 1.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.